You're listening to an African Elements top news story for March 10th, 2026. Please visit our website at africanelements.org for more daily news. Why UN Security Council reform for Africa matters in 2026. The year 2026 has arrived with a powerful message from the heart of Addis Ababa. During the 39th African Union Summit, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres delivered a speech that shook the halls of global power. He stated that the lack of a permanent African seat on the UN Security Council is indefensible. He reminded the world that the current year is 2026, not 1946. This statement highlights a massive gap between the way the world looks today and the way it was structured 80 years ago. African leaders are no longer asking for a seat at the table. They are demanding a complete overhaul of a system that has ignored them for nearly a century. This push for political reform is happening at the same time as a massive demand for financial accountability. African nations are calling for $1.3 trillion in annual climate finance. This is not a request for charity. Instead, it is a demand for climate justice. African leaders argue that the continent suffers the most from a climate crisis it did not create. The historical context of this struggle is deep. It reaches back to the end of World War II. It involves the fight against colonial rule and the ongoing struggle for economic sovereignty. For the African diaspora and those watching from the United States, these headlines represent a global version of the fight for civil rights and fair representation. To understand why Guterres called the current situation indefensible, one must look back to the birth of the United Nations. In 1945, the world was emerging from the horrors of the Second World War. The winning powers met to create a system that would prevent such a conflict from ever happening again. However, this system was built while most of Africa was still under the boot of European colonial rule. At the time the UN Charter was signed, only three African nations were independent members: Egypt, Ethiopia, and South Africa. The rest of the continent had no voice in the room where global rules were written. The permanent five members of the Security Council, the United States, the United Kingdom, France, China, and the USSR, were chosen because they were the major powers of that specific moment in 1945. They granted themselves veto power, which allows any one of them to block any major decision. Because Africa was largely colonized, its interests were represented only by its colonizers. This historical original sin created a structural lag that still exists today. The world has changed dramatically, yet the most powerful body in the UN remains frozen in time. This exclusion has left over 1.3 billion people without a permanent voice in decisions that affect their own peace and security. The 1960s brought a wave of independence across the African continent. This period is often called the Year of Africa because so many nations broke free from colonial chains in 1960 alone. As these new countries joined the United Nations, they began to demand changes to the Security Council. They argued that a body designed to manage global peace could not be effective if it ignored an entire continent. In 1965, the UN did respond by expanding the Security Council from 11 members to 15 members. This change added four non-permanent seats, which rotate among different regions. However, it did not grant Africa a permanent seat or the veto power held by the original five members. For decades, African nations struggled to find a single, unified voice on this issue. That changed in 2005 with the creation of the Eswatini Consensus. Named after a valley in Eswatini, this document represents the official position of the African Union. It demands at least two permanent seats for Africa, complete with all the rights and privileges of the original members, including the veto. African leaders argue that anything less than full veto power is institutional discrimination. They refuse to accept a second-class membership. This unified stance has made it much harder for the current P5 members to ignore Africa's demands, leading to the high-stakes discussions we see in 2026. The struggle for political representation in the UN is similar to modern movements to decolonize educational systems across the continent. Both efforts aim to remove the lingering shadows of colonial influence. Just as scholars seek to center African perspectives in history, diplomats are seeking to center African perspectives in global security. The blood and treasure that African nations contribute to UN peacekeeping missions is immense. Most of the resolutions passed by the Security Council today concern issues in Africa. It is a deep irony that the nations most affected by these decisions are the ones with the least power to make them. At the center of the reform debate is the veto power. This privilege allows any of the five permanent members to stop any resolution in its tracks. It does not matter if the other 192 nations agree, a single no vote from a P5 member kills the proposal. This power applies to major issues like military intervention, sanctions, or admitting new members to the UN. Historically, the veto was designed to keep the most powerful nations involved in the UN so the organization would not collapse. However, in 2026, it is seen as a tool that prevents the international community from acting on urgent crises. In late 2024, the United States and the United Kingdom made a historic shift by supporting two permanent seats for Africa. However, there was a major catch. They proposed that these new seats should not initially have veto power. They argued that adding more vetoes would lead to diplomatic gridlock and make the council even more dysfunctional. Under the current administration of President Donald Trump, the U.S. remains cautious about diluting its own power on the global stage. African leaders have rejected this no veto offer. They compare it to being invited to a dinner party but being told you are not allowed to speak. They believe that without the veto, a permanent seat is merely symbolic and lacks real influence. While the political fight happens in New York, a financial fight is happening in Africa. The demand for $1.3 trillion in annual climate finance is a central pillar of the 2026 African Union Summit. This massive figure comes from the new collective quantified goal framework. In the past, wealthy nations promised $100 billion per year, but that promise was rarely met and was far too small to begin with. African negotiators now argue that the world must move from political numbers to needs-based numbers. They have calculated the cost of seawalls, drought-resistant crops, and green energy transitions. The total is $1.3 trillion every year. This demand is rooted in the concept of climate justice. Africa contributes less than 4% of global greenhouse gas emissions. Yet, the continent is warming faster than the global average. It faces more frequent floods, longer droughts, and devastating storms. This situation is parallel to how reconstruction efforts failed to provide long-term equity after the American Civil War. In both cases, the people who were harmed the most were left to clean up the mess with very little support. African leaders are framing this finance as a form of climate reparations. They argue that nations that built their wealth on fossil fuels owe a debt to those who are now paying the environmental price. The $1.3 trillion figure is often met with shock in Western capitals. However, African leaders point out that this amount is small compared to the trillions spent on military budgets or fossil fuel subsidies globally. They argue that the money exists, but the political will does not. This financial demand is inextricably linked to the Security Council reform. Without a permanent seat on the council, African nations lack the leverage to force changes in the global financial system. They are tired of being policy takers rather than policy makers. For them, climate survival and political power are two sides of the same coin. A major reason Africa requires so much climate finance is because the current global financial architecture is stacked against them. Many leaders call this system global redlining. Just as banks once denied loans to black neighborhoods in the United States, the international financial system charges African nations much higher interest rates than wealthy nations. An African country might pay 8% interest on a loan, while a European country pays only 1% for the same amount. This high cost of debt makes it nearly impossible for developing nations to invest in their own climate resilience without falling into a debt trap. Many African countries are now forced to spend more on debt repayments than they do on healthcare or education. When a climate disaster hits, they must borrow even more money at high rates to rebuild. This creates a cycle of poverty and vulnerability that is very hard to break. These efforts for workers to gain economic justice across the diaspora are mirrored in this continental struggle. African leaders are calling for a decolonization of institutions like the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund. They want these bodies to provide grants and low-interest loans instead of predatory debt that hinders growth. If everyone agrees that the current system is indefensible, why has it not changed yet? The answer lies in the UN Charter itself. Changing the rules of the UN is an extremely difficult process defined in Article 108. First, two-thirds of the 193 member states in the General Assembly must vote in favor of an amendment. Second, that amendment must be ratified by two-thirds of the member states' legislatures. Crucially, this second step must include all five of the current permanent members. This means that any one of the P5 nations, the US, UK, France, China, or Russia, can single-handedly block any change to the Charter. This double hurdle has kept the UN Security Council virtually unchanged since 1965. While China and Russia often state that they support Africa's aspirations, they have been vague about whether they would support an African veto. They are wary of any reform that might include their own regional rivals, such as Japan or India. This geopolitical chess game leaves Africa in a state of waiting. However, the pressure in 2026 is different. The alliance between the UN Secretariat and the African Union is stronger than ever. The moral weight of the indefensible argument is making it increasingly difficult for the P5 to maintain the status quo without losing global credibility. As we move through 2026, the demand for reform is no longer just a diplomatic talking point. It is a matter of survival for millions of people. The history behind these headlines shows that the struggle for a seat at the table is a continuation of the decolonization process that began 80 years ago. Whether it is through political power on the Security Council or financial justice through climate funds, African leaders are making it clear that the world of 1946 is gone forever. The global community must now decide if it is ready to build a system that truly reflects the world of today. The eyes of the diaspora and the entire world are watching to see if justice will finally be served on the international stage. Copyright, African Elements.